great picture?
Yes. The greatest, the longest, the largest, and the darkest. They'll jump out of their boots.
Oh, they'll go down on their knees.
My Lord Burgomaster, ladies and gentlemen, this is a memorable day in the history of the Civic Guard.
In the name of their lordships, I request you to unveil Rembrandt von Rhein's masterpiece.
Expect the remaining 10 to pay for portraits that do not exist.
Lurie, 10 of these gentlemen have nothing to pay. Is there anything else?
Yes, Rembrandt, there is something else. You undertook to paint a good, satisfactory picture for our mess room. But this thing is, it's a monstrosity. Look at it for yourself. Is that supposed to represent the officers of the noble Civic Guard? A collection of gentlemen? Do those look like gentlemen of rank and position?
I wasn't trying to paint gentlemen of rank and position. I wanted to paint men, soldiers, a company marching out. Gentlemen of rank and position, indeed. Here's your gentleman of rank, and what's underneath it? End this. Your nose is painted by bad liquor. Your mouth is reeking with bawdy kisses. Vanity and stupidity are written all over your face. The only pretty thing about you are your ruffs and your breastplates. And the only distinguished thing about you are your hats.
Here, what kind of a figure do we have here? Is that
at the very beginning, that's the theme at the very beginning of the song, how does the film prepare the viewer for a certain type of he's a genius that nobody knows, and Professor Dyer's theory, only now do we know that this thing is worth so much.
I was going to say, it seems like, you know, when he's describing the people and their faces, they look like he's kind of showing the human nature in certain different types, to show it for what it is. And that what's failed, it kind of reminds me of Pascal, in the imagination, how the costume, what you're wearing, dignified, is what when they see that, they assume that you're someone special, you're dignified, you're intelligent, and that really that doesn't necessarily mean something.
Okay, so the beginning sets us up for kind of expecting this unrecognized genius, dying in poverty and so on. How does he then represent himself in the film, or how does he then represent in the scene where the night watches?
Portraying people as they really are versus as they want to be seen.
Right. And he's kind of the only one who sees through all it. So we have, again, this contrast between this great hero, who's really the only one who we know seen the nature, and all the others are kind of pompous and only about appearances, but he's the only one who can see into, see through things and see into people, so on. But there's, throughout this film, there's this contrast between Rembrandt and the rest of it.
It wasn't as if, according to the movie, it wasn't as if he was trying to deface them or depict them in a bad light. Because clearly the words he said, the way he described the officers, those were very terse.
He was much more offensive than his words than he was with the people. The people was not supposed to be offensive.
He just was showing them doing their real work, right? Is that what he's saying?
Just showing them. You were asking about the size of the painting. It is actually, it was originally actually longer than this. It has been cut on all four sides, and because they are on. It was displayed not in a dark spot of obscurity, but actually in a very prominent place, but then it was taken down to be displayed in a different city mall in order to fit into that space and then be cut on all sides. And, it was originally even bigger and probably gave much more of this monumental and also more spacious. I mean, there was also a lot more spaciousness around the figures, but it is a very long
I'm curious where it is. Where is it displayed today?
Today is in Amsterdam. But yeah, we have this very this character that is very defiant, very arrogant. I mean, represented as very arrogant. And but like you said, his words are much more offensive than his art. Art is just trying to really paint, be realistic, paint things as he saw them, as he. But that was obviously not what they had expected. Okay, anyway, this depiction of them was very difficult. It comes to somebody who's just very anti religious, really trying to debunk everybody's value. But it is very questionable if that is actually a true depiction of this character.
All right, let's go back to the PowerPoint if we can.
And I'm going to play. We're at the night watch.
Let's go to the next one. Okay, here we have another self-portrait on the left here. Now we've seen a couple of self-portraits already. How has anything changed? How More dignified, very good, yeah. More dignified, more serious.
It almost seems like he's still just looking outward in the world. You know, it's never in his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
It's
It's more dignified. One of the reasons why it appears more dignified is also because he's using more of a horizontal line now than he did before. We have the horizontal line of the wall that he's leaning on, the horizontal line of his arm. Even his face, like the mouth, is very, it seems kind of very horizontal, and his stare, of course, is very horizontal. So that gives us kind of a square, stable appearance. And then his form, his shape, is kind of a pyramid shape, which is different from other quarters, which is much more kind of always, often more slanted or more bent. This painting has not only one, and actually has two paintings before it. This one is Dürer, but it also is reminiscent of another portrait by Raffaello of Castiglione, which I was not sure was a bit too small. But of course, the similarities show that he's trying to step into the steps of other famous precursors and representing himself in the line of other famous painters and emphasizing his own status as a famous painter now. Oh dear. Well, we're now in this mature period. I think we're maybe too late.
Yes, I can try and undo it if you want.
But since we now know how to change the brightness of the sun, we can do something about this. This is a drawing, so far seeing this painting in that long to drawing. Representing Christ healing a sick person.
Who's it about brightness? Mm-hmm. Reduce brightness.
Yeah.
You being from the Netherlands. Can we go back one more time?
Okay.
is this brightness or
forward.
Contrast? One more time. One more forward.
Another way.
No, forward. The other way. Yes. So it's the contrast.
So what do you want me to do?
Can we make it a little darker? Or the contrast sharper? I don't know. Anyway, in this drawing, we can immediately see that there's more of a classical approach. It's much more dignified. The figures appear much more dignified and noble. There's not as much. More contrast, maybe.
contrast, I'll just make him fainter.
Yeah.
Up to a point. So what have we got here? I don't know that manipulating is going to make a whole lot of improvement.
Okay, maybe this is good. So, like I was saying, there's more of a magical approach here. The figures appear much more dignified, much more noble, and there's also not really this drama or movement there. It's a very calm scene, and it's more calm and more not really static, but more with more emphasis on the line again, where it's organized very clearly into two distinct groups of people. Centered around Christ, but it seems to be also more emphasizing inequalities, looking into the spiritual side. And the figures, as opposed to classical art, they don't seem to really be posing, just sitting on a pose. It seems to be kind of like a natural representation. And there's, well, you can't see any of the deck, but there's nothing more deck in there too. If we go to the next one, the Jewish Bride, this one is also very classicistic in its approach. It's almost like there are a lot of Renaissance portraits that, if we didn't know that this was by Rembrandt, this could almost be like a Renaissance style portrait. And the use of, the only thing that is kind of not really classical is the use of colors. It's much more, and the way you paint is being used, much more heavily. Thick and heavily used here, and a lot warmer too, and more intense color than we had in a classical painting. But it seems to be, the painting seems to emphasize much more the inequalities and the inner life characters.
Kind of a triangle.
Yeah, very good. And then we have again this kind of triangle. And again, it's kind of a very dignified representation of this artistic people. But almost mysterious too, all of the figures. All right, there were a couple of self-portraits on the blackboard that I asked you to look at.
Can you exit the PowerPoint slide?
I can.
I wanted to ask you to talk about this briefly.
Where is it? Where do you want me to go?
Can you go back to the flash drive?
Oh, yes, no doubt. Mm-hmm. And the flash drive is here. Okay.
So I already mentioned that she's probably one of the painters with the most self-portraits. She has about 75 altogether in different mediums, not just in painting, but also in drawing. And they're about on the same level as the Confessions of Old Time. They're really kind of like a diary in painting. I wanted you to talk, maybe to my example for a little bit, about those, I think like the 4 or 5 on there, what we see there in terms of maybe development, in terms of style, in terms of the self representation, how you think you were wanted to be seen or presented. Obviously dressing up.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay, I was going to, I can get to.
Oh, you don't have to.
You don't need that? Okay. I have a little problem of my own in that my glasses fell apart.
Oh, dear.
At any rate, so. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, dear. I'm so sorry. They
no, no, no. It's just the frame came loose and one of the lenses fell out. And I'll certainly not be able to fix it. Well, I'll try and work on it up in my office after this.
Well, you go down slowly, you'll be able to get to it.
Yeah. Said, "Oh, you're gonna unveil it?" He said, "No, that isn't." And he
a realism effect. So the painter was so great that he could fool nature, that the birds thought that this was actual food, and he could fool the human eye too. So this story just illustrates how great the painter these two guys were. And so Zeuxis is the image of a great painter of antiquity. And yeah, this is the laughing, the story that he told about himself laughing himself to death, painting the old woman. This is often what this is considered to be. So really posing, again posing, as a great painter of antiquity, painting this old woman. And of course, this has also often been taken as a case. People also thought that this was one of the last paintings that he did, and then he then actually laughed in the face of death. And, but it's not. It's actually dated 62 and 69. So not again. It's not the self. It's just the pose again. But it is interesting that he really represents himself as a painter here. And this is kind of defines you laughing into the face. Again, stepping into the steps of previous great painters. Okay, what about the other two? What do you think about that one? This is another one where he is representing himself as a painter, and here the apostle Paul.
I thought it was kind of interesting that if that was a self-portrait of himself, actually as the artist, that that was, it just looked messier and not quite as it's sort of modeled and not as sharp and finished looking as the other ones were. And I was commenting on that, and she brought out that, you know, if that was him picturing himself as an artist, then maybe it was easier for him to portray himself as character, but when he was portraying himself as himself, maybe that was a more complex. Yeah, it was harder to capture that.
Yeah, no,
with clarity.
Where do you need to go?
The PowerPoint
again? Oh, the PowerPoint. Yes, I was just getting that. Yes. Oh, yes. I can do this. Yes.
Okay, next slide. Let's start with the similarities. How is the subject here similar in the two things? So we have the scholar and his study. The scholar and his study. And how's the subject definitely?
One seems more, it's a like flash of inspiration, while the other's actually, you know, trying to grasp something, study. You know, that's what I got from the light, like, all of a sudden had this inspiration and found out what it was looking for. And not for some thinking.
Colors are really different.
Yeah, well, one is a drawing, one is a painting.
No.
So that's a whole, yeah.
There's more of a focus in the painting. It seems
mysterious quality and more, yeah, the inspiration is kind of, they're both briefly interrupted in their work, but this is a much more, yeah, the inspirational aspect of the mysterious aspect is highlighted, whereas in Vermeer it's much more of a rational, I mean, he's stopping and reflecting, stopping thought, but everything is very orderly, very clear. The light is falling fairly evenly on all axes of the universe, like you said here, we're going to talk to this point of light. So, yeah, that's definitely the main contrast. This seems much more, yeah, the element of universe and reason seems to be the primary, the ordering force here. Now, Vermeer is a little bit younger than Emma, but this painting was painted. The Heidelberg period have already evaporated. We're passing out from our classicistic elements here. And so proportion, perspective, rationality are becoming much more important in Vermeer and his contemporaries too. He is, by the time he was painting this painting, his son, who I think we haven't dealt with yet, but I think it's going to be one of the next arch topics. And he's also representative of a more classical Renaissance art, so classical Baroque art. So this is a style that was prevalent at that time. Can we move on to the next one? Okay, so we have a map again. He is from not very far from where Lamba was born. He was born in Delft. Each other. In contrast to Lenema, he has a much shorter production span, only about 20 years, and a much, much smaller overall painting. And he is also often kind of a mysterious figure in art, because there are only two or three paintings that can be reliably graded, and a lot of the paintings that have a lot of attribution problems. There's a consensus only on about 31 of his paintings. Some people say 35, 34, 29. I mean, it just varies from scholar to scholar. There's some that the attribution is just not very clear. And so he's always kind of a mysterious figure of history. And especially since his art is so small, and that's really a very, very small number of paintings, thing like that. The reason for that is probably that is that he was very meticulous and very slow. This is just the rhythm of his painting. Like I said, he lived in Delft. He married in 1653, probably converted to Catholicism at the time, so he was a Catholic in the Protestant north, but he's never really, he's done a few religious paintings, but that is never his main people have also liked to find out, we have a lot of myths here. It was often said that he was unrecognized in the time, that only the corner bakery bought his paintings, and that he died in misery and poverty. It is true that he died not being very rich, but the reason is that he simply didn't have a lot of paintings to sell. And he had 15 children, so he had a pretty big household, and a big family to see. So it's no surprise that he didn't die to be pretty rich. But he was certainly not unrecognized. In his lifetime, he was not as famous as Rembrandt, for example, but he did have international fame. But he also never left Delft. He might have traveled, but he never really. For example, he didn't go to Amsterdam. And being in the capital city is going to help you a lot better because things like making known or making the world be seen by international travelers. So he didn't have that same the same exposure. What is kind of interesting is that he, since he, like I said, had 50 children, he never painted a single child. He was very interested in domestics in the 16th level, but they never showed him. It's always just women, sometimes women in company with men, but there are never any children. And I think that just also highlights that for him, I mean, this particular realism, this, like that I referred to earlier, and it's a realism of the imagination. He never just represents the scene that he sees, so he didn't, for example, represent his wife and his children. It's always a realism in his mind, a realism that he's fabricating. So it's a that it's William's painting really, despite all the realism of that, the painting has little to do with the actual reality of his life. So that is I also ask you to compare these two paintings. So once again, going back to Van Vermeer, they both have like painted images of painting. So this one is called The Art of Painting, it's kind of an allegory painting. And here we have the painter in his studio, or the artist in his studio, also something called. It's a fairly early one. This is the earliest representation of Van Vermeer himself as a painter. Now, what can we learn about that conception of the art of painting?
Mirror, it seems that it's imitation, imitate reality in a way. Even though he said it's still in his mind, but on from what so far you can tell, that you know, he's trying to copy her as is, and then it seems to take some kind of inspiration. I looked at her as like a muse, because of the book and the horn, and the flowers and the things on it. And so you need inspiration. The difference that I've seen in the Rembrandt from Vermeer is that it's like the artist is the medium. Everything, the art comes from the artist, like, in a sense. He doesn't need anything else around him for his creative reality. You know, he knows man's nature, he's a man. Once he's experiencing things portrayed, you know, by himself alone.
Exactly what Vermeer is painting. We see his subject.
Yeah,
but
it's actually
Rembrandt,
like you said, it's a muse and she's representing Cleo, the music history.
But with Rembrandt, all you know is it's a huge canvas and you see a Rembrandt looking at it, but you don't know what's on it. And so I keep thinking, gosh, I wonder what's on the canvas.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of,
yeah.
It leaves you wondering.
Uh-huh. That's a very good point. Mm-hmm. So here we have. The artist, we don't know the artist's identity here, and Vermeer, quite in contrast from him, never painted a self-portrait. We have no idea what Vermeer looks like. We know quite well what Vermeer looks like. So it's really exact opposite here. So we don't know what he looks like. We do know exactly, like I said, we know exactly what he's painting. We even see part of the painting, we don't see a whole lot, but we do know what his painting is going to look like. And she just represented you, she represents the play of the music history. And there's also a map, a historical map, which represents this, really this interest in topography, and topography and reality and history.
Is there a reference to the paintings of the gospel writers that where you have the curtain being lifted and you are, I guess, if you're into it?
It's kind of true. We're peeking into this part of the chamber.
It's all interesting. I just see him painting. He's actually doing some press program. Step back from the canvas, whether it's painted or it's a blank canvas, it's almost just kind of contemplating what he's done and what he's going to do, as opposed to being the actual back.
But like you also find, you don't know where he's at. Is he just thinking about, what am I going to do here? Is he not even, has he begun yet, or is he done? Is he contemplating the completed painting? Is he in the middle of it and taking a step back to decide? So we have really no idea. But the painting is really, it's kind of like looming over him. It's a lot more monumental, and the painter is almost like dwarfed by the painting. He's in the background, looking at it. And if you look at him too, he's kind of in rags. He's here, really not representing himself in a very dignified way. The painting is what is standing out here. The painting, the canvas, I shouldn't say painting, it's really the canvas, it's not even the painting. Is what is in the foreground here and what is kind of looming over the painter. Mm-hmm.
Does the wordplay translate pretty well in the Vermeer tone, the art of painting?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just running with her analogy, I mean, you just see a completely different, they're just emphasizing different things about painting. And, you know, the artist on the left, his back is turned to us, whereas Rembrandt is facing us. Mm-hmm. And then even in the titles themselves, the painter in his studio, they leave out the artwork. He mentions the studio and the painter. There's no mention of the artwork. Whereas Vermeer, I mean, you have the wordplay and then the actual process itself.
Yeah. Although I should say, this is also sometimes called the painter in the studio. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How did Vermeer sign this?
We'll see that on, well, we might not see it on the screen, but he usually did the, with his last name, Vermeer, it was even the V, and it was kind of awfully done with an M between there and the R. But we'll see that hopefully on one of his paintings. The fact that he's here sitting with the backdrop and you don't see the face, there's no one to see the face, and then also the canvas almost. If you look at the, I mean, there's nothing on the wall. It's barren. It's completely bleak room. Whereas here we have the lavish curtain, we have a mat, we have a lot of things lying around. It's a bit of an issue. Okay, next one, please. All right, here we have the famous view of Delft. Like I was already saying, the topographical landscape here. Important, and this is a representation of a cityscape, not a landscape, obviously, but a cityscape. It was very innovative because, I mean, there was really nothing like this before this. Nobody dared to really paint an open air picture like that, so it's really very colorful, a lot of different hues, blue, the red, intense yellow. It's really something that hadn't been done before this. And it's also all very smooth, very minor detail. And he's using a technique called pointillé, I'm not sure it's a French pronunciation, pointillé, where he dabbing paint onto the canvas. And it creates these kind of sparkling effects. So it almost seems to be like the sun is directly shining onto the buildings and creating the sparkling reflection of light there. And that was a very technique too. And he was using that a lot in the 50s and 60s. And with this illusion of the building light that is also used in the sparkling. Okay, this is a fairly mature work. I want to read a letter. Fairly mature work. Like I said, he has painted a lot of portraits of just women, either alone or in company. But there are a lot of paintings, portraits of really just women in an interior situation. And here we can also, light was very important, like the shining of light, but unlike them, there was nothing like it. We just have a light illuminating the figure, and we usually see the women absorbed in something. They're not interacting with the viewer, or they're really just absorbed in something, in some task, either reading, writing, some other artistic task to doing yoga or something. But they're usually not engaged with the spectator. It's always a very calm scene. Calm and balance, and blues and yellows are also, and here we just have yellow, the blue and yellow are the main colors of the And we always have a very clear spatial organization, often very horizontal, and this window on the left side is almost in, but in a lot of the games, we have this window on the left, and somebody can stand inside the window. So we also have a lot of, like these rectangular round forms, but always very clearly, clearly defined shapes and forms, very quite so, but here's women. Let's hold on one more slide. So here's just a very small... yes. Certainly after the film. We have one more time. I've already said, so women in his oeuvre, there are 27 women, painting of women, either alone or in public. 27 out of, that's really mostly, so that was really his primary interest. There are some where there's company of like three people at piano or something. But in, I think, about 70, which is, depending on what you calculate, the total would be, but it's about half. About 50% of the paintings, just a single one. And they're usually engaged in, like I said, some sort of often set task. It's often reading or writing or,
domestic,
yeah. But it's often kind of a more of a, sort of an artistic task too. Because they're either reading, writing, or here lace, the lace maker, that is an art too. And then we do have the maid for the mill, but they're often engaged in some sort of task. Now that has often been seen as kind of an expression of the social cultural identity of the Dutch bourgeoisie, and kind of this inward turning and the leisure too that people can get from the same from other social groups. But it's also interesting to see, this emphasis on women being engaged in creative tasks, whatever thought, even lace making or creating a breakfast table, kind of the creative tasks, including even women as a very creative artistic sense. And it has also often been compared to this concept of art itself. So these women are can be seen as kind of representative of creation, of artistic creation. And okay, here we have the milkmaid. This is the first painting that concentrates on just one single figure, on one single single woman figure. Objects on the table are all very, very detailed and very minutely painted, and everything is very, every fold is very, very detailed. I was going to have you talk about a couple of these.
social issues, like what kind of like social space do we see there here, what sort of social setting is that? Get on with the aesthetic, like in what ways do we see what kind of aesthetic stands of using these women as a way of depicting a kind of an allegory of painting, even though these are not, if they not meant to be allegory of painting, but what way do they represent this perception of art? So those would be a couple of things that we could discuss about these paintings. I'm going to try and put, put a few of them just on there, and then we'll see if we can do that.
You want to get out of here?
No, actually, no. Could we move forward? Yeah, actually, I have some. Okay. I think I can put them. No, I can't put them outside of that. But we'll just go through them like this real quick and talk about them like that. So here we have, this is called the Love Light Letter. Could we just briefly say what we there's a woman sitting in a chair playing a musical instrument, and then behind her is
another person who sings a
piano, right? Right, it's a servant, and since it's called the Love Letter, you know what she's doing?
Did she just give her the love letter?
Right, she's giving the lady the love letter. So the lady is playing the lute, and then she's receiving the letter, and the maid is bringing her the letter. It's probably not very clear, but here in the foreground we can see the room, and we can see the different spaces. So here we have basically two spaces, the space of the lady who's receiving the letter, and then in the foreground here we have the space of the maid and the robot, which we mentioned about the knowledge of the letter.
And the curtain
drawn
back.
Yeah, again, with this room. Alright, if we move to the next one, and we're going to come back to this one, but here we have the woman with a pearl necklace. And then the last one is the very famous girl. She's not doing anything. She's just looking. So I would like if you just take 5 minutes and talk about these three paintings and just move it.
Oh, well, it's all right. I've retrieved everything, so I have all the pieces.
What, did they fall down?
No, well, I don't think so. Well, I mean, it fell down, yeah. So, well, it hasn't happened in a while, but it does happen. Now, okay, do you want to do something here?
No, we just, I only have one of this one, but I forgot to put them
on the
table again.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Now, also, I don't know if maybe things will look better on the website, on the blackboard. You never know.
No, but I don't have this on blackboard.
Well, you know.
But we can Google.
True. I mean, whatever you want. But we have them here. Of course, we can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's looking in the mirror, visualizing herself.
Do you know where to go, or are you just going to Google?
Yeah.
There is a website called EssentialBermuda.com.
Essential Bermuda. Possibly. if I don't do it, it's going somewhere. Yeah, it's a star, right? Come on.
Oh,
it's
painted.
Yeah, okay. It's still going.
We can just look at it.
Well, perhaps that's what we want. At any rate, it's. But it's. Well. Okay. Then we can push play. Right.
And how do we get back?
Cursor.
Oh.
You don't need me at all.
Oh, I do.
On the other hand, if I sit here, I can actually see the pictures.
Yeah, that's, yeah, you don't know about tomorrow.
Everybody else. Oh, no. Oh, my.
Yeah.
about how he portrays, or how he portrays reality, but from his, like, it's not really how he sees reality, it's kind of how he constructs it in his mind, and how it appears to him. So in that sense, I mean, it looks starkly real, but it almost looks too real, I suppose. I mean, it almost looks a bit too constructed.
I don't think it necessarily has to, doesn't mean it isn't real, it just doesn't kind of mean it took place, it may, that could take place.
Yeah, certainly, I mean, all of these are very, very everyday, everyday scenes. Maybe we could just take them all, or could we go back to the love letter, the two back? Yeah, thanks. All right. The curtain, we're kind of glimpsing into this very quiet and very intimate scene. This is an intimate scene between, so these two women are sharing an intimate moment. The one, the maid, is handing her lady a letter. But we can also see by the foreground, by the images of the items in the foreground, that their social spirits are really very set. The maid is engaged in the task of cleaning the house. The woman is engaged in the loop. She has the leader to just sit there and play the this kind of displays hides at the same time as it displays the sexual tensions. We have the, I mean, they are separate, but in this moment, at this moment, this very brief moment, they're sharing certain knowledge, they're sharing something. But we also know from looking at the picture that usually they're not, their intimacy is really just a momentary thing. We need to, social spirits are very, very separate and very, very feeling separate. They're just combining the momentary intimacy that I want to snap. So
even though it displays this harmony, this harmonious moment, it also hints at the sort of difference between the two.
Are you saying the fact that the artist is hidden? In other words, if someone else is present in the room, that they were aware of this sort of scene when everything was.
Yeah, exactly.
So, in a sense, he's kind of capturing time in almost every one of the
right.
paintings that we see.
Yeah. Okay, the next one. The one with the pearl necklace. A lot of Vermeer paintings are like that. They're very harmonious. They speak to you immediately. They're pretty. They're beautiful. They appeal to ideas of beauty or harmony. But they also have a very mysterious quality.
I thought that her outfit was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And also the girl with the pearl earring in her head, what she has on her head. I thought that was really odd, and I'm wondering, I don't know much about what Dutch women wore in this era, but it doesn't look like what I would typically think Dutch women would wear, and so was he costuming them?
This one, we'll talk about this in a minute, but yes, the previous one, I think this is not a costume, I think this is just kind of not really appropriate, but something like when it is a
maternity outfit. because there is no bodice to it. Like, and I don't mean that. I wasn't making fun. I just meant when I look at it, she seems fuller in the stomach area. She looks very young. I don't know.
It is possible. I mean, there are other images of women, and one is definitely the one that might be looking very pregnant. It is possible. I mean, since he's representing the messy scenes, and these women as mother figures are certainly. Yeah, I'm not sure if the model is the same, but it does look very similar. Okay, this lady here is standing in front of a mirror and is putting on a necklace.
Since it's kind of the same kind of view into the world, even though this day it's going to be getting dressed.
So we have the private, she's in her private room, but also we have this idea of the public image that she's displaying with the necklace certainly among her social status. So we have this kind of emerging of public and private in two of them.
I'm kind of getting out of order here, but in everything except the milkmaid, there's a clear sense of the material, which would fit with the bourgeoisie, but then in that one, it's the setting that is really austere. Even the table, I mean, there's plenty of food, but it's just bread and milk. Is there anything, you would think it would be the opposite. If they got enough money to have all the stuff, then, they should have more bread and milk to eat.
Yeah, and probably did. Often, I think the reason why we don't have any images here of the milkmaid too is really to focus on the woman. Usually when he does use paintings, there are a lot of paintings where he does use paintings from the background, where you have to have the map of painting from the painting. They're usually used to kind of like an allegory or to tell stories of the painting with a cupid in the background, or the breaking scene or something, where we have where this painting in the painting that is commonly in the painting. I think when he doesn't have them, it's usually to really focus on just not apply any rhetorical meanings, but just focus on this. Now here we have the woman just contemplating herself in the mirror, so it's a very, very self-reflexive image, which we could also apply to this new art, just something very self-reflexive, contemplative, and as maybe even as something really
affecting the world, but it's affecting upon itself rather than upon the world. So despite all this realism, here we have the woman actually looking at herself. She's kind of turning this tradition, this wonderful self-portrait tradition, upside down. The woman is actively looking. She's not being looked at. She's actively looking at herself. So that's an important step. And then, of course, in the next one, the girl will go through that tradition is turned upside down even more. The woman is not looking. She just stays on that herself, but directly at us. So now we're being looked at. The woman is no longer the object of our gaze, but we're becoming the object of her gaze. She's much more actively looking here. And here, the viewer is still being kept out of us. The woman is the woman and her reflection, and the viewer is almost like, pushed to the side. All right, that brings us to the next one. So we've already mentioned that we don't have a background here. She's looking directly at us. And she's looking at the top, she's not really looking at the actual Dutch lady. And it is, this is often, this is falling in the category of what was called the Chony. And Chonies were kind of fantasy figures. So this is not an actual portrait of a woman. It was not conceived as a portrait. It was, this Chony is an imaginary head of a woman. It's always just a head of a woman figure. And, it is a costume. She does, being this charming figure, this is kind of not really, she's neither me nor Lee. She doesn't fall into any of the social categories. So, we don't really, which is kind of combining the two in one. Position is also kind of curious because she should be just a side portrait, but she's really bending her head in a way very awkward. She's really making an effort to look at and to look.
Why are you looking at me? Like, why are you looking at me?
Yeah, kind of. defiant way, yeah, much more assertive or maybe an aggressive way than you would expect of a woman.
I actually disagree. I think she looks. I don't think she looks assertive at all.
No?
It just seems like a very vulnerable look on her face. A little, almost surprised, but almost as if she's looking at a specific person.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong.
No, I mean that's surprised.
Subjective.
Yeah.
Sadness for being like that, you know, she's
was going to ask if you thought this was more of a almost like a fleeting glance on her behalf or a fixed stare.
That's a good question. What do you think?
I think given her posture, it seems like it'd be a fleeting glance. The fact that she's turned in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
You don't. I mean, you would. It'd be really weird if I was like staring at y'all for
yeah.
you know, 3 minutes like this.
It would be weirder.
It's a longer glance. That's not like
what. Well, I mean, maybe she was. I mean, I don't want to get carried away. Maybe she was surprised. Maybe tapped her on the shoulder. But there, it seems like if it is a fleeting glance, it seems like it would almost be like a time marker, like in the other, the one of the matronly woman pouring the milk. You know, the milk itself is kind of like a time marker. That you see that thing happen in a certain brief amount of time. And the same with the posture with the, you know. Your mind kind of projects the rest of the motion when she's putting the necklace on, but that's a time marker right there.
Mm-hmm.
If it is a fleeting glance.
Yeah, we don't have that here.
But I don't see her head going back really quick, you know, as if it's, you know, it may be a glance, but it doesn't make me think that she's turning away anymore. So, you know.
See, I think that what determines length of time here is not her, it's us. So, in contrast to the other ones where the time is determined by the task, and it's the milk. The reading of the love letter. This one, it's, well, she's intent on it.
That's a really good point. I mean, it is kind of timeless in the way, too, that she is wearing a costume. It's a journey. It's not an actual portrait. So this is really kind of totally out of time. It's not an actual portrait, so it's also not an actual moment. But, yeah, like you said, I think we really determine what we make of this glance or gaze or whatever you want to call it, depending on what we think is actually doing or saying. But yeah, the viewer's response is really becoming much more important here than in previous paintings on previous periods too. Well, I think I should probably let you go. Oh my god, yeah, I should really let you go. I have a point that you can well, thank you very much. You can come for the other and I look forward to my next time.
Just read the whole thing, the question. And I will put questions on my part to tell you what was in the question.
Thank you very much.
Alrighty, that's very fine. Now, I would like to look over there. I'd like to walk between the parts.
Oh,
however,
thank you.
However, I need to put everything away.
Yes, of course.
Now, let's see. Okay, so I think I'm going to get out this.
Yes.
Yes, putting.
And I will put that on.
What is it? Save, I guess. Yes, I can do it too. I mean, I theoretically have it on there. But I want to get this out. Okay. Yes, ma'am. Did you want to speak to...
I was going to say about my paper topic.
Oh, yes.
I was thinking about Artemisia Gentileschi.
About who? Sorry, could you...
Artemisia.
Okay.
About who?
Gentileschi. Artemisia Gentileschi.
Okay. Oh, yes.
And the woman. I haven't really narrowed it down to how I'm going to compare her to other painters of the time, but
mm-hmm.
I'd be okay to kind of focus in on
that. Yeah, that would be fine. Do send me an email.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Great, okay.
Do
thanks.
I need to inject this?
Yes, you do. So you want to go to that little thing over there, and that will bring you a window of the finder. There you go, the smiling face. Okay, now you can go up to there, and you can push on the eject symbol.
Is this eject?
It is. And when it starts, okay, what did it say?
It's in use. Oh,
okay. Okay, so it
open.
Thinks it's in use, but it
we have
is.
Something open, probably.
Yeah, here, let me, I think it may
oh,
need.
Oh, wait, this one here, the painting.
Oh, heavens, yeah, so quit, I would say.
Okay, now let's see if that allows me to. It's in use.
Yeah, let's quit.
Oh,
the.
Well,
oh, is that? Yes. Okay. Where did that go? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, they were pretty talkative.
Yeah, you got them going.
Great.
That's good. So do we still not have it out yet? Still no. Okay. I don't know what applications to quit. And anyway, maybe Keynote is still... No, we closed you, so that's all right. So you're out. We don't want you. I'll see what else is up. Anyhow, it doesn't matter. I don't care what. It's not going to hurt this. Say, oh, you shouldn't have. Oh, there you are. Yes. Oh, that's so terrible. Okay, now, we're going to turn this off. Yes. Turn this, shut this down. Then I must see about shutting down the other machine. Shut down. Yes, yes. I really want to shut down.
Turn this
Oh, yes.
The red one?
Yes, there's an on-off button over there. Now, okay, the first thing I'm going to